Welcome to the RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast, brought to you by DraftKings.com, the leader in daily fantasy sports. Use the promo code RotoWire when you deposit for a free contest entry today. I'm Clay Link, joined as always by Jake Letarski. If you're out there on Twitter, you can find Jake at Jakeski52. You can find me at Clay W. Link. This podcast is now available for subscription on iTunes and Stitcher, so please leave us a nice review if you happen to be listening on those platforms. Just two teams on bye this week, Jake, Pittsburgh Steelers and the Carolina Panthers. So pretty much a full slate. Want to dive right in. Thursday Night Football, kind of a stinker here. Chiefs at Raiders, the 0-10 Raiders, have this game in the black hole, but really don't have much hope for them earning their first win in this contest. Now, Derek Carr, quarterback for the Raiders, is dealing with a bit of a quadriceps issue. He is probable, though. He was, they limited his reps early, but returned to a full practice Wednesday. No real problem here, but I would recommend staying away from the Oakland quarterback and all their wideouts, really. The Chiefs' defense is the top-ranked pass defense in football right now, but any chance you see any hidden value in this game?
Very, very little hidden value, to be honest. I mean, I'm watching the Raiders' running back situation, looking at McFadden, hoping he can do something, but in the league that I have to rely on him on, I'm so far in the hole already, as evident by the fact I'm relying on Darren McFadden. Yeah. So maybe hoping for a Latavius Murray flyer. I guess we'll wait and see on that. I think he's maybe poised to potentially overtake some of those high-paid backs over in Oakland because, I mean, they're 0-10. What do they have to lose by deploying a guy like Latavius Murray? Got most of the work last week, and I might have a good fantasy outlook moving forward.
Yeah, the reports out of Oakland is that he has seen more work in practice this week than at any point, and it took the Raiders long enough to finally get him involved somewhat. It's kind of inexplicable, just given how bad McFadden and Maurice Jones-Drew have been so far this year. Jones-Drew, just 10 snaps last week, probably going to, again, play a very minimal role. But if you are a McFadden owner, the matchup isn't great, and you have to be a bit concerned just given that Murray looks like they are at least going to split work, and I wouldn't be surprised if Murray got the larger share of that workload. Led the team in yards last week despite just four carries on the ground, and actually total yards from any position player on the Raiders with 59 total yards. So I think, where they're at right now, you're pretty much in full evaluation mode already. One of the earliest, the first team to be eliminated this early from the playoffs mathematically since 2003, I believe, and you really got to turn your eye to some of these young guys and give them a chance. Now, if you're really desperate at the tight end position, Michael Rivera, disappointing game last week, but, and I would recommend being hesitant and, probably turning elsewhere if you could, but Chiefs, as good as they are against the pass, really just middle of the road against tight ends, 7.5 fantasy points per game to opposing tight ends. That's in standard ESPN league. So, maybe there, but on the Chiefs side, I think, you got Jamaal Charles, and aside from him, maybe Travis Kelce, but aside from those couple guys, even with the plus matchup, don't really see much to like.
Just another comment on the Chiefs side, Tamba Haliba, great outside linebacker they have, showed up on the injury report in practice this week, but he is listed as probable for this game. So Chiefs defense at least looking to be at full strength. So I wanted to add that. As far as fantasy options on the Chiefs side, of course, there's Jamaal Charles, and no matter who he's playing, you start him every week. But now that he's playing against the Raiders, even on a short week, I like his chances. Over under 120 yards for Jamaal Charles tonight, Clay. I'll put you on the spot.
I'm going to say under because just on a short week, I think they may try to get Nile Davis a bit more involved.
Yeah, the running backs physically taxed, perhaps. So that's actually a good notion, and I agree with that. But I could also see a very big game and maybe a touchdown apiece for those guys. I think that seems like a fair assessment.
Yeah, I'm totally confident in Charles starting him, of course, everywhere. And the Raiders have actually been a bit better on defense, but still lack athleticism on the edge. And Jamaal Charles last year against the Raiders, I still remember that, where he just screen pass after screen pass to the house. So definitely give him a role even on the short week. But let's move on, Jake. Browns at Falcons here. Julio Jones did not practice Wednesday or Thursday, but Coach Mike Smith said that he expects Jones to practice Friday and believes he will suit up Sunday against the Browns. Now, we talked about it last week. Red zone usage has been pretty much inexcusable on the Falcons side in regard to Julio Jones. Just haven't been targeting him much at all, but do you think maybe here at home, He may finally find the end zone.
There's opportunity for a bounce back game. I mean, Julio Jones has been largely disappointing in fantasy this year, something to watch. But you look, he's going to get a lot of Joe Hayden against the Cleveland Browns, but he does have the size advantage coming in at 6'3". Of course, the hands and stuff are all there, and this isn't like it's a hamstring or an ankle or a foot injury for Julio Jones. He's got a bug. It's an illness. He's a little bit sick under the weather. I think Coach Mike Smith believes it's one of those 24-hour bugs. That's why he sent him home from practice to get rested up. I don't think the practice time is especially huge for him, and as disappointing as he's been, you still have to deploy Julio Jones in every format, just about no matter what, because he's the guy. I mean, Roddy White's going to get his looks too, but I think double-digit targets for both of them are going to be is a reasonable expectation. And, I mean, anytime Julio Jones takes the field, he's a threat for 115 yards and a touchdown or more, and you can't shy away from that. And he's got a decent matchup against the Browns, the pass defense improving a little bit there, but I'm really more excited about the Browns on the offensive side this week, Clay.
Yeah, big story really in the entire NFL this week is the return of Josh Gordon, Flash Gordon as he calls himself. Really excited to see what he brings to the table in his very first game. I know he's told, you know, former teammate Nate Burleson that he's going to tear the league up. I don't know why that got so much play on Twitter and various news outlets, but
I think it was the weight he lost that got a little
couple,
bit into there. I think
10 to 15 or something.
Yeah, 10 to 15 is what he was saying. I mean, maybe looking like a little bit of a gut, but for a pro football player. I can't even say that coming from me.
Oh, not, so I'm right there with you. But what are you expecting, Jake, in his first game back?
Man, if I had to predict Josh Gordon, I think my heart says, and watching them all week and seeing how their passing attack is totally different. It's poor without him there. They're really having a tough time. I want to say 140 and a touchdown. However, everybody in the organization is seeming to play it down. Hoyer said, well, careful, he's not going to be our savior. Petten said, well, he's not really in football shape yet. He's getting there. He thinks it might take a couple weeks. But, man, I think when Gordon gets in that game and he suits up and he gets his first taste of NFL action, they're going to want to give him the ball and find ways to get him the ball. So he should know most of the playbook, ideally. I would hope so, especially from the preseason and OTAs and stuff like that. But even if they can't use the full playbook, you think they'd try to get him the ball on some screen passes, maybe a reverse, and just put the ball in the hands of your playmakers. So I think he's going to get plenty of touches. I think 12 targets is about what you can expect there. And he'll turn that in from somewhere in the 6 to 10 catch range. I know that's pretty vague, but I'm starting him. There's only about five receivers I start over Josh Gordon this week.
You know, I have him in my top 10 as well, and certainly think he'll be playing with a chip on his shoulder. I mean, this guy, again, led the NFL in receiving yards last year despite missing two games. You know, the only thing that may worry me a little bit, though, with Gordon is just the team's usage of him. Maybe they try to ease him back a little bit. I know he'll probably be close to a full go, but maybe they limit his snaps a little bit. I'm sure there will be, you know, double coverage on him quite a bit. And another thing is that more than likely going to be without Jordan Cameron again this week.
Yeah, dealing with a concussion there for Jordan Cameron, and it's really not looking optimistic for the rest of the season. I have him in a couple leagues, and I haven't dropped him just yet, but Petten doesn't know for sure if he's going to play the rest of the year. This is his third concussion in the past two seasons, his second serious one at least. And when I say serious, I mean, I don't know the degree. I'm not a medical doctor, but I do know that it has caused him to miss time for the second time this season. So something to take note of. If you're in a shallow format or even a 10-team league and really need a roster spot, I think he might be expendable, but I think you're still holding out hope that he comes back during one of the last couple weeks of the season. And the real potential with Jordan Cameron is when Josh Gordon comes back, which he is slated to come back, of course, that we just talked about. The best production for Cameron last year was when they had Gordon there, a way to detract attention from him. And I think their passing attack is at full strength when they have the two of them back. And they might be pretty dangerous if they can ever get back there. Of course, Cameron, a little bit of an unknown, so we'll wait and see there. But a little bit nervous about his outlook for the rest of the season.
Yeah, team has yet to rule him out for this week, but did not practice Thursday. Seems like he has very little chance. And yeah, I'm definitely going to be starting Gordon where I can. I've been holding on to him long enough and excited to see what he does. But part of me also hopes that maybe he doesn't have a monster game this week, because the guy I traded him to a couple weeks ago. I have to play.
I'm playing Josh week. Gordon in one league too, and I'm sick about it because I'm afraid of an explosion.
I'm very nervous. Well, let's jump to Titans at Eagles. Titans heavy underdogs here on the road, 11-point dogs. But this game, not a ton of injuries to get to. I mean, we saw last week Mark Sanchez take some pretty big shots, but was able to stay in the game, stay healthy. We'll get the start again this week. Jake, it looks like, you were telling me before we came on that you have both Macklin and Jordan Matthews here. Matthews has been great with Sanchez under center. Now, what are you thinking? Are you going to start both, or are you a bit hesitant to do that, putting all your eggs in that one basket?
Yeah, this is my big dilemma this week. Jeremy Macklin aside, he's been great for me this year, but for my second receiver, I can choose. This is only a two-wide receiver league. I can choose between Jordan Matthews, Terrence Williams, and Kenny Stills or Pierre Garçon. And in any league at all where I have to choose between those options, it's a no-brainer for me. I'm going Matthews, but I'm slightly afraid to start both Macklin and Matthews just because who knows? What if they happen to have a bad game? What if Tennessee shows up like they did against the Steelers on Monday night? Who knows what happens there? So I'm thinking right now I'm going to go Terrence Williams. I like his matchup against the Giants. But, I mean, if Macklin has another 100 yards and a touchdown game, I'm going to have to reconsider that strategy moving forward.
Yeah, I've typically been of the mindset that I want to hedge my bets, want to get teams from or get players from various teams in my lineup, not go with two from the same team. But I think compared to some of those other options you have, I'm not dogging you at all. I think they're all quality options. I think I may still go Matthews because, if you think, hey, I have Jordy Nelson and Randall Cobb, if that were the case, you're doing great on a week-to-week basis. Same with, a couple other receiving tandems around the league. And, hard to do with Matthews after a couple big games. Maybe he'll warrant more, attention from the defense. But, and Terrence Williams certainly right up there, but I think I may roll the dice personally and go with both Macklin and Matthews.
And I think that outlook is looking pretty optimistic for me the rest of the season. Looking ahead to week 13, the Eagles have the Cowboys, and they have a very tough matchup against the Seahawks at home. But after that, they have the Cowboys again, then the Redskins, and then the Giants, and all fairly atrocious pass defenses that, there's little reason to get excited about there. So there's going to be a couple weeks in there. Knock on wood here, hopefully I'm making the fantasy playoffs in those leagues. But there's going to be some weeks where I'm going to start them both just because unless Kenny Stills, who I think will really make the jump in the absence of Brandon Cooks, Drew Brees will go deep to him a lot and he'll get his targets in that way. There might be a week or two where I'm tempted to put Stills in the mix. But for now, I think I'm going to back off just a little bit, but there will be weeks where I'm doing this. I just wanted a quick touch on the Titans side of the ball. Delanie Walker, pretty fantasy relevant guy over there. He's going to visit a doctor Thursday, according to the Tennessean. And Coach Ken Wisenhunt, or Wisenpunt, as many like to call him after the Monday night fiasco there, he's pretty optimistic about Delanie Walker suiting up. He was a full practice participant Wednesday, but he still might need a little bit of a clearance getting into the game. So an injury situation to monitor there if you're a Walker owner in a deeper format. Also, Justin Hunter's been a little bit limited in practice this week with a knee injury. I could see him being a questionable status heading into the week with pretty good chances of suiting up, although I'm not really deploying him in season-long formats. With Justin Hunter, I think in my head, he's the daily type of guy, the tournament guy that you might need to take a flyer on and have him exceed expectations greatly to cash in a tournament. But again, not necessarily using him in something like the Millionaire Maker this weekend until we can confirm his health.
Yeah, and also for the Titans, I mean, after Le'Veon Bell shredded him last week, now rank as the worst defense against opposing fantasy running backs, giving up 21.6 standard fantasy points per game in ESPN format. So, LeSean McCoy, no-brainer. I'd also give Darren Sproles a start after a disappointing game last week. Of course, very shifty in the open field. I think he'll pay significant dividends if you do give him a start. So, but what about a Bishop Sankey? Are you still holding out hope that he can be a reasonable fantasy option this year?
I mean, my take on that's simple. He is the lead guy now. He appears to finally have overtaken the competition in that backfield there. And there's definitely room to grow, but I don't know. I'm not expecting too much more than 60 yards and a touchdown, and that's roughly my ceiling for him because, again, they're going to have to throw a lot to keep up with the Eagles' offense is going to try to play the game at their pace. And for that reason, I worry a little bit about Bishop Sankey this week. But a decent RB2 in maybe a 14-teamer in that situation. It all depends on the situation you're looking at and, of course, what the other options are.
Yeah, I did find the end zone last week, Sankey. And, you know, I don't have a choice but to start him in one league. Don't feel good about it. But I'm going to continue riding him. Hopefully we'll be able to find the end zone and, you know, find big chunks of yards more frequently in the weeks ahead. Now, Lions at Patriots, interesting interconference game here. It's in New England. The Lions coming off a disappointing loss to the Cardinals last week. Patriots really on a roll, looking like the class of the AFC, really. But some interesting injury notes to get to here. Droik Bell, of course, returned to practice Thursday. Looks like he'll be a go. Absence Wednesday, seemingly just about maintenance. But Reggie Bush also back in the fold. Looks like Calvin Johnson was also held out Wednesday strictly for maintenance. He was back in action Thursday as well. So it looks like they'll be close to full strength. And Reggie Bush, we've been talking about him every now and then. But, you know, last week's absence, again, seemed to be precautionary to a large extent. Any reason to give him a start here? Or do you think just because of how much time he's missed recently over the past month or month and a half, really, that maybe they continue to limit his touches, lean heavily on Droik?
Well, yeah, I think they'll lean heavy on Droik. And with Reggie Bush, I do own him in a league. I'm taking a wait-and-see approach here. I actually have another interesting dilemma. I've got two running backs in this game, both Reggie Bush and Shane Vereen. We'll get to the New England backfield in a sec. But as of right now, I have Shane Vereen as my flex. And I'm thinking it's going to stay that way because, of course, I happen to be stacked at running backs in that league. It's a PPR where I own Forte and Andre Ellington also. So that's helping me there for sure. And, I mean, yeah, I'm going Vereen a little bit, even though the Lions do have one of the best run defenses in the league, clogging things up front. But on the Patriots side of the ball, I came into work this morning, and the first update I wrote was LeGarrette Blount. Mm-hmm. Signing today with the New England Patriots. I don't know. He does know the playbook because he was there for the entire 2013 season, but I don't know if he's going to get into the game plan a lot. Bill Belichick's pretty random with that type of decision. I don't think that takes much away from the value of Shane Vereen, but it does take a little bit away from the value of maybe a guy like Jonas Gray. Yeah, Jonas. Exactly. So how are you seeing that situation play out, Clay?
You know, Jonas Gray, really impressive last week. Of course, over 200 yards, 4 touchdowns. But I think, you know, the Patriots are just so such a different team as in terms of game planning and changing up their game plan from week to week. I know I've seen a lot of people suggesting this week is going to be a Vereen week, you know, just because the Lions are so good up front, look to get the ball on the edges to Vereen in the open field, and maybe use Blount as a hammer, you know, up front to wear down the line.
Short yardage.
Yeah, short yardage guy. Could definitely, I think Jonas Gray is a trap this week, personally. That's why I didn't put in really any waiver claims for him. It's going harder after Isaiah Crowell of the Browns. Just don't really see him repeating that anytime soon. And with Blount coming aboard, I think as soon as this week, we could see Gray's role limited significantly.
Yeah, I mean, Gray had a ton of carries in that game last week. I'm checking it out right now just to make sure here. But let's see here. He had 37 carries against the Colts. And if anything, the arrival of LeGarrette Blount is going to stop that from happening again. And, you know, 30 carries is probably going to be a thing of the past the rest of the season out. I can't really see it happening that way. So I don't want to discount Jonas Gray too much. He has a tough matchup this week, so I am having a hard time starting him. But fortunately for owners in all my other leagues, the average owner is going to see that line from last week and chase that and think I need to start him this week. It's not something that I'm necessarily, I don't qualify at him as a must start this week, especially in PPR formats where I'm shined back even more.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, I think Gray will have, you know, 10 plus carries, but anybody thinking he's going to approach 30 this week is going to be sorely disappointed. Packers at Vikings, Packers 10-point favorites on the road. This is kind of interesting just because this is the Packers' first visit to the outdoor stadium there in Minnesota. Should be a pretty interesting game. Now, on the Vikings side, Jerick McKinnon took part in Thursday's practice. Appears to be just fine, but not the case for Matt Asiata. He's dealing with a concussion. Status up in the air, but the team did go out and sign Ben Tate. Kind of an interesting move with Adrian Peterson, you know, still battling issues you know, off the field issues here and trying to get reinstatement in the game. But it looks like Tate will be part of their backfield mix as soon as this week. Matt Asiata seems like they're still you know, confident in him as the lead back, but how much do you see Tate eating into his workload?
Not very much, at least in this week. I mean, covering the Browns, I got to watch a lot of Tate, watch him kind of fade out little by little, you know, dealt with an injury early on in the year, then came back, had a couple big games, a couple 2-touchdown, 100-yard games, and it was looking good, but it's been just steadily downhill since about week five or six, right after their bye week. So when I was thinking about where Ben Tate would eventually end up as a landing spot, I thought, I mean, the fact that I get to see him go to an NFC North division rival of my own Green Bay Packers here just made me happy, because he didn't seem to have the greatest attitude with the Browns. I distinctly remember the locker room press conference after the game where he basically told a reporter, "Why are you talking to me? I didn't even play." And kind of snapped back there a little bit, maybe not so dealing great with the media, not going to get himself a good spin there. But who knows, questions about the attitude and the locker room stuff. And that's exactly what I like to see in other NFC North teams that are not the Packers. So I don't want to challenge his character too much, but I do like getting to see him go to a team that I don't like so much. And I think actually, you know, as long as McKinnon suits up, I think he leads the backfield charge. The Packers' defense has been incredibly opportunistic of late, but they're still one of the lower-ranked defenses, especially against the running game. They have a tough time. Of course, Clay Matthews' movement to the inside, which everyone's been talking about the last couple weeks, that's definitely helped their run support and open up, you know, plays for everybody else on the line. But I guess McKinnon, if you can find him cheap on DraftKings, especially in the PPR format, of course, checking into rotowire.com in the morning, making sure he's active and good to go. I think he's a solid play this week. And then on the Packers side, you got to go ahead and play all your Packers as always. So, you know, Rodgers, Lacy, Nelson, Cobb, none of those guys have any question marks around them at all. Suit them up, because they're probably going to have a pretty big game. Packers 10-point favorites on the road at Minnesota.
Yeah, I'm really excited for this one. You know, of course you're starting all your Packers. The thing with me that I just kind of just don't like, I mean, I'm sure they'll be fine, but just to see the Packers peaking at this moment, you know, I kind of wish it was down the road. I think there will still be some more bumps in the road to come, and maybe they, you know, maybe they'd come in here, and I really don't think there's any real chance they lose this game, but maybe they, you know, have some struggles against Minnesota on the road. Maybe McKinnon hurts them on the edge a little bit where they're still somewhat vulnerable. But I do agree, you know, Clay Matthews moving in has really helped the Packers run defense. Looks a completely different the past couple of weeks. So I think, you know, starting the Packers and outside of McKinnon, I'd be very hesitant to go with anybody else from the Vikings. Even Cordarrelle Patterson, probably play it safe. Maybe Kyle Rudolph, who, you know, didn't play much at all last week, but he seems to be back practicing fully and kind of an interesting guy just because the talent is there. Maybe take a wait and see just to see him take on a larger role. But I think maybe he could make for an interesting dart. Jaguars at Colts. Not a whole lot here. Dwayne Allen is nursing an ankle injury. Remain out of practice Thursday. That could be good news for Kobe Fleener owners if he does end up sitting out. But what are you expecting from T.Y. Hilton in this game? Bounce back? Or are you kind of tempering expectations?
I am expecting a bounce back game because he can't get much worse than the 34-yard total that he racked up last week. And, I mean, we know the Patriots. You know that Belichick likes to take away the essentially the best component of the opposing offense, and chose to focus in on T.Y. Hilton, and it worked out pretty well for him. So, I mean, I don't know. I think there's a very good chance he could get 80 yards and a touchdown early on, but, I mean, Colts 14-point home favorites, you think they might pump the brakes a little bit once they get themselves a comfortable lead. But who knows? Maybe that won't be the case. Maybe they'll really drive it in the way the Patriots did to them and kind of get that off their chest and ready to move forward. But, I mean, as far as the Colts, I'm really more intrigued to see how the running game plays out there with Ahmad Bradshaw out for the season. If Trent Richardson can do anything worthwhile, or if he's still the 2.1 yard per carry back that he seems like he's been at least for the entire time with the Colts.
Yeah, I'm excited just to see what he's able to do with that increased opportunity. I know he's going to be pretty much the guy, and I think the touchdowns will be there, but I'm not sure about the yards. You know, of course, teams aren't able to stack the box against him, really, but still, his field vision is just really pretty poor, and until he's able to start making more decisive moves, I think that the Bradshaw loss is going to prove pretty big for the Colts, and just because Trent Richardson is really not the guy, not the pass catcher that Bradshaw is. And you know, without that element to his game, I think teams will be gearing up and trying to focus on stopping him, even if they're still not able to stack the box, still able to keep an eye on him and not really have to worry about him coming out of the backfield much. Now, on the Jaguars side, of course, they lost Allen Robinson last week to IR. Disappointing game from Allen Hurns last week, just two targets. So in light of that, is Cecil Shorts the guy to own there in Jacksonville, and are you going after him?
I mean, I think most of the leagues that I was in, Shorts had been hanging, or the owners had been hanging on the Shorts. So nothing, not too many opportunities there for me. I don't know. I'm not too confident in Allen Hurns. I think he's very fluky, very up and down. You can never really count on him on a week-to-week basis. Maybe a good tournament play on daily sites, but I think Shorts is the lead guy there. And, I mean, Bortles is going to air it up. He's going to throw a few picks, and he's going to throw a few that connect. So I think that there's reason for optimism heading into this week with Shorts going against that Indy pasty. That I don't know, but I really think that Denard Robinson is possibly the person to own or play if you're in a situation where you need to, just because watching the Colts front seven get dominated by the Patriots, if the Jacksonville offensive line isn't nearly as good as what the Patriots brought to the table, but, you know, something to think about moving forward the way the Colts played last week.
Yeah, Denard is definitely, you know, right up in my top 10 as far as backs moving forward. I'm pretty sold on him, and yeah, the Jags, not a great offense, but I think he will be able to allow them to move the ball at least somewhat. And you know, you can't write a team off in fantasy just because they're bad. There's still value to be had there. And you know, I'm not really sold on Hurns, but I'm also not willing to completely write him off. Of course, 7 catches for 112 yards and 2 touchdowns back in week 9. So upside is there if he can maybe start seeing more consistent looks. Also, Mercedes Lewis, you know, talked about Michael Rivera, a couple of Kyle Rudolph, some tight end darts this week. What about Mercedes Lewis? Activated to the 53-man roster, Mercedes truck earlier in the week. Colts third worst against tight ends, giving up 10.5 fantasy points per game to opposing tight ends in standard ESPN leagues. So I think maybe this week is an opportunity to take advantage if you're really desperate, or if you're in a big tournament like DraftKings Millionaire Maker.
I'm not even sure I can find Lewis on DraftKings right now. I'm not sure they put him on there yet. Huh. So something to watch going forward, or I could just be typing right now. But I think Lewis is maybe a dart if you're in a 14-team or deeper, but I'm not relying on him just yet. But who knows? Maybe he's someone that Adam and I will be talking about come Tuesday on the Waiver Wire podcast, because he hasn't had as much time to get comfortable or acclimated with Blake Bortles, but in previous offensive systems in Jacksonville, they have gone to him pretty frequently in the red zone. So it's definitely a situation to monitor moving forward. And I don't think he'll be off these daily sites for long.
Yeah, big target. I could see him at least getting a score this week. So definitely worth noting that he's at least off the active roster and practicing fully. Seems like he will be close to a full go. Now, Bengals at Texans. This is a pretty interesting game here. Bengals, it looks like they'll be getting Giovanni Bernard back. Indicated that he felt good after practicing fully Wednesday. But offensive coordinator Hugh Jackson said that he plans to give both Giovanni Bernard and Jeremy Hill plenty of action in Bernard's first week back. So in light of that, I know Jeremy Hill, of course, you know, when he had the lead role, obviously a must start. But are you a bit hesitant maybe to start him with Gio back?
I mean, Gio practiced with the ones in practice today, and he's said to have looked pretty good. So I am a little bit hesitant there, especially going against the Texans front seven when he's got to contend with Watt and Cushing, although Watt not quite as much of a run stopper as he is blowing things up when the quarterback drops back. So, I mean, I'm a little bit hesitant. I want to see how it plays out 1 week, both of them. But there's a lot of places where I'm stuck on running backs and need to use Jeremy Hill. And Jeremy Hill's definitely earned his keep, and he's earned a fair share of snap counts. And it's good for the Bengals, who do have playoff aspirations, to go ahead and split that up a little bit. And that's not great for fantasy owners or daily players, because it's kind of tough to decide who's going to get it on a given day. But, I mean, I'm pretty optimistic about both of their outlooks. I like Gio in a PPR. I lean towards Hill in a non-PPR, and I think that's the tiebreaker for me.
Yeah, Hill exceeding 10 carries just once in the first 7 games when Giovanni was healthy. So I'm a bit hesitant. I still think I think he will exceed 10 carries this week just because they want to ease Giovanni Bernard back into the mix. But, you know, I think his time as a must-start is certainly dried up in light of this. But if you're thinking, you know, if you're in a shallow league, you're like, maybe I should cut him, you know, to add help elsewhere, I would advise against that. At least wait to see how Gio looks in his first game back. You know, of course, injuries can be aggravated fairly easily, and you just don't want to cut bait with a player of that caliber just yet, especially because I think during the time that Gio was out, he probably earned a larger role just as far as the timeshare goes. So maybe he will, you know, approach 10 carries every week moving forward. I don't know, but I'm a bit hesitant about him being a must-start, though, this weekend and the weeks ahead. Now, Arian Foster limited Wednesday, still dealing with the groin issue, but it sounds like even if he does suit up, he will probably work in a timeshare with Alfred Blue. Blue a lot of carries last week, turned in a pretty good stat line. Foster being labeled as just day-to-day right now, but it sounds like they have a lot of confidence that Blue will be able to, you know, keep the ground game going even if Foster's out. Now, how do you see this shaking out this week? Do you think Foster is, do you get any sense that he's, you know, either slightly better or maybe a little under 50-50 as far as his chances to play? And do you like Blue regardless?
I mean, it's very tough because Foster's been on the injury report nearly the entire season. He always seems to be going on with something or another. But just like in Cincinnati, Alfred Blue has earned himself a fair share of the carries. And, excuse me, the Texans are sitting at 5-5 right now, just one game behind the Colts in the division. So they have playoff aspirations as well, and they need to make sure that they can serve Arian Foster for the long haul so he can still help them if they do end up playing in week 18, 19, 20. I don't know if I'm quite that confident that they'll get that far. But, you know, something to think about. Of course, you need to go all out to even get to the playoffs in the first place. But, I mean, if Foster's active, I'm starting him. And I'm going to kind of watch Twitter and the news sources early on before the game to see if we can get an indication of who will get the most work. But I think a timeshare is fair enough. And even if Foster plays 10 carries for Alfred Blue, isn't out of the question. I mean, Alfred Blue had a huge workload last week and could very well do the same. And the Titans love to run the ball with Ryan Mallett at the helm. Nothing's changed. Just a couple very average quarterbacks playing for them this year. So giving their running backs a lot of opportunities in those types of situations.
Fantasy football is in full swing, and DraftKings.com isn't messing around. DraftKings.com is America's favorite one-week fantasy football site where you can win enormous cash prizes every week. You've already researched the players for your season-long fantasy team. Turn that knowledge into instant cash at DraftKings.com. Last year, one player turned $11 into $4,000 in one weekend. Another won $100,000 his first time ever playing. This season alone, six players have won $1 million in one day just playing fantasy football. Keep your season-long league where it is, but also play one-week fantasy at DraftKings.com to win huge cash this weekend. Hurry. Head over to DraftKings.com now and enter promo code ROTOWIRE for free entry. DraftKings.com, bigger events, bigger winnings, bigger millionaires. Enter ROTOWIRE for free entry now at DraftKings.com. DraftKings.com, that's DraftKings.com. Check out the Millionaire Maker for Week 12, where first place will bring home $1 million. Jake, going to continue on with the early slate here. Jets at Bills. Now, this is pretty interesting, just given the weather there in Buffalo. Looks like this game more than likely going to be moved to Monday night, either in Detroit, D.C., or Pittsburgh. Now, does that change anything for you?
I mean, I think because of the whole situation, I mean, the Bills have not been able to practice at all this week, and that you cannot underestimate the effect that has on the players. I am trying to get Sammy Watkins out of my lineup if I can, especially the rookie. I'm trying to get Fred Jackson, Bryce Brown, Anthony Dixon, all those guys out too. Not just because of the lack of practice, but the timeshare also has something to do with it. So as far as those guys go, I am keeping them out of my lineup. On the Jets side of the ball, there was Percy Harvin that I'm a little bit on the bubble in, because if they were going to be playing in a snowstorm on Sunday, which now it looks like will no longer be the case, I was making sure to bench Percy Harvin. But I don't know, they head over to Detroit maybe, where there's a dome, for example. All of a sudden, Percy Harvin's a much more intriguing play, and you cannot underestimate the outside circumstances there. So there's a few kind of if factors going on with this game. So, but as of 3:57 p.m. Central Time when we are recording this podcast right now, there hasn't been an official decision made, and it's looking between D.C., Pittsburgh, and Detroit. But in all likelihood, not going to be played on Sunday night. So it'll be interesting to see how the daily sites handle this, if they'll keep it as part of their regular contest. I know the season logs, I mean, it's a game in Week 12, so these guys, if you do start them, should count towards your Week 12 situation. But the fact that they're going to be out of that blizzard in Buffalo certainly helps everybody's case, but I'm pretty worried about the Bills, especially their offensive players, after not being able to get together and practice for a week. You can't even travel out there. Look at the news.
Yeah, it's really bad out there in Buffalo. And you know, I think you're dead on. The lack of practice time is very concerning to me, just because, you know, you have to be on the same page with these and in practice, have that repetition throughout the week in order to go out and perform at a high level on Sunday. You know, I'd probably be hesitant to start a lot of the Bills. I mean, I know Jets giving up, you know, more fantasy points per game to opposing quarterbacks than any other team, 19.9 in ESPN standard. I was thinking about, this is how desperate I am in this 1-2 quarterback league. You know, maybe throwing a dart at Kyle Orton, but after last week's game and combine that with the fact that they haven't been able to practice, I'm very nervous about giving him a start. And Sammy Watkins, too, as great as he is, you know, a rookie who hasn't had any practice time throughout the week, I think it's kind of a perfect storm, no pun intended, for another bad game or disappointing game from Watkins.
Yeah.
And the Bills, too, or I'm sorry, the Jets. I mean, there's really nobody on this team, aside from maybe Eric Decker, who I would give much consideration to whatsoever. So we'll just go ahead and jump to the next game on the slate here. That's Bucks at Bears. Josh McCown coming back home to Chicago.
No, basically, back to Trestman, who made him an excellent quarterback for a brief moment in time last year.
The guy who's, even for as bad as he's playing right now, is kind of making the Bears look bad just because of the contract they gave to Jay Cutler when McCown played exceptional football last year when Cutler was hurt. But Jake, looks like another either-or we were talking about before we came on here. Jay Cutler, Phillip Rivers, made the wrong call last week, he said, but which way are you leaning this week?
You know, I think I learned my lesson from last week, and not that I'm down on Phillip Rivers the rest of the season. I think, well, just to backtrack a little bit here, Cutler Rivers, I think I'm not the only one with this dilemma, because if you drafted either of those guys, you drafted them either as a backup to one of your studs and maybe reached a little bit for a backup quarterback, or you draft them within a couple rounds of each other in the middle with hopes of alternating based on matchups. And heading into the year in that particular league where I faced that, that's what I plan on doing, is I'm going to look at the matchup each week, see where it goes. And last week, with the Chargers going against the 0-9 Raiders, I thought it was a no-brainer. Let's go with Rivers. But I was wrong. Cutler had a bounce-back game, and I think I'm leaning Jay Cutler this week. Tampa Bay's pass defense, definitely not the greatest. They've been struggling a little bit this year, although they've shown flashes of potential over the last couple games. But still, when I look at the Tampa Bay pass defense, they're third worst in the league at 266 yards allowed per game. So that, mixed with the fact that maybe Brandon Marshall, Alshon Jeffrey getting a little bit hot, I'm going to go Cutler this week, and I actually like him just as an overall quarterback this week. I'm looking at our weekly rankings, and our own Vlad Sedler has him at number 6 overall among quarterbacks. And I find it tough to argue with that, just considering the matchup. And hopefully the Bears, they're trending in the right direction. But I mean, as a Packer fan, I don't see them as a serious opponent or rival anymore, especially after the dismantling from a few weeks back. So for fantasy standpoint, for the guys that I own on the Bears fantasy team, I'm hoping that they can turn it around a little bit and get that offense going, because when they're running at their full peak, there's a lot of major fantasy assets to have there for sure.
Oh, absolutely. Position players on that team, you know, aside from maybe the Packers, I mean, I know I'm biased, but that group is really right among the best in the game. And speaking of that group, Alshon Jeffrey and Brandon Marshall, both non-participants in Wednesday's practice, but both were able to return to a limited showing Thursday. Seems like, you know, just so, as a way to provide maintenance for those injuries, that was really the reason they were held out. Not really a major issue. One guy who, you know, disappointed me last week, but I'm really kind of looking at as a decent bargain here this week, is Austin Seferian Jenkins. Again, you know, I think he had, maybe one catch last week only. Really disappointing game, but the Bears, again, give up more fantasy points per game to opposing tight ends than anybody. I'm going to keep going to that well in hopes of hitting it big until I actually do so. And I think Safarian Jenkins, you know, could very well find the end zone this week. And
looking at his price on DraftKings, he's $3,000. Oh, that's wow. basically the minimum. So he's a very good tournament play if you're looking. Now again, if you're playing in a 50-50 or a heads up, you want to go for the more balanced lineup. And in that case, a guy like Gronk is probably his safer bet. Yeah. And I mean, he's a safe bet in any format. But if you're trying to win in a tournament and you got to go with these guys with a high ceiling as opposed to a high floor, I like Safarian Jenkins this week. I'm right on board with you, Clay.
Yeah, I like Safarian Jenkins. And of course, Mike Evans too. I mean, wow, maybe the price on DraftKings is too much. Haven't really seen exactly what it is, but maybe it takes him out of the discussion for me. But what about Vincent Jackson? I mean, I know with Evans breaking out, he's been an afterthought. But with Evans, you know, probably going to see a lot of double teams moving forward. Do you think there's hope for Jackson to finish strong over the final couple of weeks of the fantasy season?
Yeah, you mentioned Evans being priced out a little bit on DraftKings, 7,800 this week. So he's kind of exceeding the point where you can get a bargain off of Mike Evans anymore.
Profit potential isn't really there.
No longer there. But then going back to Vincent Jackson, he's looking at 5,200. So then maybe there is some profit potential there, especially if Evans gets a lot of the attention from the Bears secondary that until they played the Packers, had actually been playing relatively well this year. The rookie Kyle Fuller had been having an impressive showing. But, I mean, Vincent Jackson, again, a 6'4 target. You would think that McCown would go to him more in the red zone, kind of like he did with Alshon Jeffrey last year. Hasn't necessarily been the case so far. Vincent Jackson's been largely disappointing for fantasy owners. But, again, if you're looking for a value play and you're not playing, you're going for a more risky lineup than conservative, he's definitely an option to consider because, I mean, Vince, like we said, Mike Evans might have priced himself out this week. And, I mean, before this last huge run for Evans, he had been pretty stable, pretty middle of the pack. So, you know, not overly high on Evans. Of course, in your season-long leagues, you're starting Evans no matter what in just about any format, even if it's a 10-teamer. But, I mean, room for profit on these daily sites if you look at trying to stay ahead of these trends and not be too overreactive as to what happened the week before.
Yeah, that's what it's all about for me in DraftKings. It's just profit potential because when these guys get priced up, I mean, when you have the money left over and you can go for an Antonio Brown or Forte or guys like that, then you're going to do it because they're so proven. But Mike Evans, not really proven yet, and overreaction to last week, it really limits the upside and profit potential for me, so I'm going to be staying away. Now, Jake, let's jump to the afternoon game, Sunday afternoon. Interesting one here, Cardinals at Seahawks. Now, Larry Fitzgerald, dealing with a knee injury, did not take part in practice Thursday, something to definitely keep an eye on here. You know, a veteran guy, of course, doesn't necessarily need to practice throughout the week in order to play, but getting the sense here that there may be some concern about his status. But do you think, you know, in light of that maybe Michael Floyd, who's coming off a nice game, should probably be locked into most lineups?
Not against the Seahawks. As much as I want to say that, and as much as I want to be optimistic about Floyd, because I did own him in a couple places. I remember predicting at the beginning of the season that Floyd would actually outproduce Fitzgerald, and there's still time to make that up. I don't completely want to back away from that yet, but Fitzgerald does have a reasonable lead over him. But, I mean, Fitzgerald came back into that game on Sunday, and even though it could have been a situation where, you know, maybe the pain numbed over, he just kind of psyched himself up to overdo it and then had some time to think about it and for it to kind of develop, I guess, as an injury, maybe that changes things. But I think as a veteran receiver, we've seen with veteran receivers, don't necessarily need to practice the entire week in order to suit up and get back into the game. So, I mean, I'm looking at Floyd, but I don't see him as much more than a wide receiver three, to be honest, just because you don't want to overthink the last couple games. And, I mean, his price on daily sites is going to be up a little bit, but not quite as bad as the Evans range. Actually, Michael Floyd, I think the Seattle matchup really brought him down on DraftKings because he's looking at about 3,900. So there's potentially room to profit there, but if Fitzgerald doesn't play, I'd imagine Floyd will get a heavy dose of Richard Sherman, and that John Brown might even be the better play if that's the situation. If you're looking at Cardinals receivers, except, you know, it's also tough because John Brown's 4,600 on DraftKings, so he's $700 more, and I'm not quite so sure I agree with that value right there. But But you know what, you're right. That's kind of a make me cringe type value that because he's so hit or miss. But again, you never know with the tournament play and like that. So and I mean, Andre Ellington owners too. Just want to throw that out there. What a tough stretch they've had. Detroit followed by Seattle. Two solid defenses. Very tough matchups. Not stopping me from starting Ellington though. And even though I may not be feeling great about it, I still think of him as a must-start. Questionable, again, is on the practice report, but he's pretty much been questionable all year. So not getting too worried about that situation there.
Yeah, no, a tough matchup for him, but definitely give him a start. Now, you know, Floyd was decent last week, just getting back to him. And the Seahawks have shown some chinks in the armor this season. But for me, trip to Seattle for Drew Stanton is just something that really scares me. I mean, this guy... I mean, admirable performance last week, but by no means spectacular, and just such a hard place to play. I just have a feeling that it's going to be a long one for Drew Stanton and the entire Cardinals offense. So I'm kind of hesitant there. We'll jump to Rams at Chargers. Not a lot of injuries to get to, but Jake, I did want to touch on Ryan Matthews, who did return last week. You know, decent showing, 70 yards on 16 carries, 4.4 yards per carry. Not special, but a decent game. Good to see him get 16 totes in his very first game back. At home against a Rams team that shocked a lot of pretty much the entire world, really, with that win over the Broncos last week. Are you starting him with confidence?
I mean, the Rams are giving up 4.3 yards a carry to opposing defenses and also giving up about 115 yards a game on the ground. So as highly regarded as their pass rush is, the run defense has been a little bit shaky at times. So, I mean, if you had Matthews and you hung on to him this long, chances are you drafted him to be your RB2. And I think of him as right in the RB2, maybe dipping in the flex range just a little bit. But the matchup's not as scary as it looks on paper, so... I'm not too worried about starting him. However, across the side of the on the other side of the ball, I guess, I mean, San Diego Chargers, decent in terms of run defense, actually pretty solid here as far as I'm looking right here. Actually giving up 4.4 yards per carry to opposing backs, so a higher average allowed, although just 109 yards a game. So you kind of have to take both of those stats into consideration. But if I had to pick between Ryan Matthews and Trey Mason, I think I like Trey Mason a little bit more this week. Are you on board with that, Clay?
You know, that's really tough. I may lean Matthews just because I still believe in the Chargers offense to a certain extent, but you look at Trey Mason, 29 carries last week, under 4 yards per carry, totaled 113 yards, but I think he's carved out a significant role in this offense, and I think they will continue to feed him probably 20-plus times again. And in that sense, it's very close, but I think, you know, I see Sean Hill maybe struggling a bit in this game, and Chargers, Phillip Rivers should be mad at himself for the way he played or has played recently. I'm going to go Matthews, but I certainly could see the argument with Trey Mason very easily. I think both would make for decent RB2 flex plays this week.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Dolphins at Broncos. Big news here are the three major injuries on the Denver side. We got Julius Thomas dealing with a sprained left ankle, did not practice Thursday. Emmanuel Sanders also did not practice Thursday. Of course, suffered a concussion on that ugly hit last week. And Monte Ball, not officially ruled out for this week, but is expected to miss 2 to 3 weeks with an aggravation of that injury. So I'm, you know, the Broncos definitely down several of their big playmakers here. Do you think Demaryius Thomas really steps up this week? Or do you think that they pretty much blanket him in light of all these injuries?
You know, it's easy to say all these guys are out. Demaryius Thomas is going to get most of the work. But you make an excellent point, Clay, in the fact that the Dolphins have a pretty strong defense, and they're going to try to make their main focus shutting down Demaryius Thomas. And there's a couple guys, maybe even a handful of guys, that I think could benefit from this from these guys being out if they are, in fact, ruled out. Of course, them not practicing doesn't bode well for their chances of suiting up Sunday. On the wide receiver end, I think Andre Caldwell, that's an old Charger. How am I getting that mixed up? But no, Andre Caldwell and even rookie Cody Latimer, I think leaning more towards Caldwell just because it's the second year with Peyton Manning in the offense. I think that Manning will be able to find him. There's no way Manning plays this bad 2 weeks in a row. He's one of the best quarterbacks of all time, and he's going to figure it out, come out with a chip on his shoulder. But I think he's going to find Andre Caldwell quite a bit. And if Julius Thomas doesn't suit up, that also complicates things a little bit, because I mentioned Jacob Tammy as a dart on the Waiver Wire podcast. And, I mean, there's a chance that maybe he gets a red zone and maybe 50 yards. I don't see him being used all that much between the 20s, to be honest. And I like him, but I don't like him a lot. And I'm not really putting my money where my mouth is this week because, again, a very cheap price on DraftKings. I believe he's just the $3,000 minimum. Let me double check. No, that went up a little bit. $3,400 for Tammy on DraftKings. So if you're throwing a dart in a tournament, it's not bad. But at the same time, I myself, I'm not going to use him in any lineups just because I don't have enough confidence to rely on him in that type of way. But again, I like Caldwell a little bit better, especially in tournament plays, those 50-50s, you want to ease up. But Caldwell, $3,000 salary on DraftKings, so something to watch out for, and maybe even thinking about putting him in a lineup, because I might make a lineup now and use him and see what else I can come up with.
Yeah, you know, taking a leap of faith, but I kind of like it. You never know. I mean, I know Peyton always looks to his big targets in the red zone, so you never really know who he's going to find, especially with all three of these guys out. I mean, I know the offense was bad last week when these guys went down, but Manning's prepares better than anybody else in the game. You know, they've been preparing hard this week without these guys practicing. So I think they'll be all right. And C.J. Anderson, I think, makes for a pretty good option this week. Dolphins really kind of middle of the pack against opposing running, but fantasy running backs, 15.4 fantasy points per game to opposing backs. So, you know, nothing too crazy. I think he'll get a lot of work and really pay dividends to those owners who, you know, used that high priority waiver claim a couple weeks ago. And on the other side of the ball for Miami, Lamar Miller, dealing with a shoulder injury, was limited at practice Thursday. After being a full participant a day before, kind of troubling, but it seems probably more so about maintenance. Nothing to suggest that he's had a setback with that shoulder. So you will want to double check, as always, with rotowire.com. Be sure that he's active, but it looks like pretty safe to deploy him in your lineups. Now, Redskins at 49ers, disappointing here. Jordan Reed, you know, this is a guy I've always been high on. The talent's there, but now has a hamstring injury, remained out of practice Thursday. I would begin making other plans if you do have Jordan Reed. We've discussed several tight end options on the podcast today. Probably take the safe route, and you know, I'd probably even cut Reed at this point, just because don't know how serious this hamstring issue is. Now, in the same breath, I mean, RT3 has been disappointing in his first couple games back. Of course, caught some heat from his head coach for kind of throwing his teammates under the bus last week. But as far as on-field performance, do you have any hope left for Robert Griffin III?
I don't have hope in a real-life perspective, in just the way that he treats his body and doesn't seem to be quite there. That's no reference to the physical shape he's in. That's more just the amount of hits that he's willing to take. But from a fantasy perspective, you always got to think about those running quarterbacks and how they add a new dimension to the game. And I hate going back to this example, but in one of my fantasy seasons a few years back when I made a deep playoff run, believe it or not, I was using Tim Tebow on that magic at quarterback. And that just shows an example once again of how a kind of crappy real-life quarterback can turn into decent or mediocre fantasy productivity. I kind of punted quarterback this year and went with what came to me, and it worked out pretty well. So I don't know if I'm ready to cut bait on RG3 in a fantasy standpoint. I think if you're in a 10-teamer, you can probably let him fly. But in 12 or greater, you know, there's always a chance. And unless you have a Pro Bowl, high-caliber, top-five quarterback that you just plan on using the rest of the season, then maybe he's expendable. But if you're kind of streaming matchups, there's always a chance that he turns it around and gets things going. I mean, you've got DeSean Jackson and Pierre Garçon to work with. You've got Alfred Morris to lead the charge. And you've got Roy Helu on third downs to kind of dump the ball off to. He found the end zone last week. So the weapons are there if Jay Gruden can get that together in his offense. And also got to remember, Jay Gruden, as an offensive coordinator in Cincinnati, made Andy Dalton a top five fantasy quarterback. So as far as what we're seeing from Griffin, it's not there yet at all. But I don't know if I'm ready to cut bait just yet, but my faith is dwindling rapidly.
You know, I'm not that high on him either, but looking at rankings for this week from various sites, including, you know, our own Jeff Erickson's, who actually was filled in for on the value meter this week by Vlad Sedler, who has done a very good job when he ranks. But I think I may be higher on RG3 than a lot of people just because You know, I have him in one league, and I've actually been pondering the decision on whether to start him or Mark Sanchez. Now, I'm probably going to start Sanchez, but I think the gap that I'm seeing in these rankings is a bit larger than my gap between those guys. I just think Griffin has some upside still. I mean, we haven't seen him really be effective with his legs thus far, but and Sanchez should right the ship. I mean, in that system, I believe, with all the attempts and the pace, that he should be able to put up numbers, if not... even if they are in garbage time like last week. But I think Griffin, you know, maybe one of these games he's gonna go for, you know, 20-plus points. And maybe it's this week. But I just think that I'm probably a bit higher on some on Griffin still than a lot. It seems like he's been ridden off in a lot of fantasy circles. But, Jake, Sunday night game, Cowboys at Giants, a really big game for both sides. The Giants really, you know, playoffs hopes dwindling here. I really need this win at home. But a very tough matchup. But, yeah, it's not a ton of injuries either side. I mean, I know Rashad Jennings back in the fold for New York, but do you see them being able to move the ball consistently? And what's the deal with Eli Manning? Are you able to trust him and their receivers after that 5-INT performance last week?
I have pretty much zero trust in Eli Manning in both fantasy and real life because, yeah, Eli's going to come at you and have a good game once in a while, but he's going to follow it up with more duds than not, and that's how it's been over the last two seasons. The only real fantasy guy that I want to trust on the Giants right now is my man ODB, Odell Beckham. He showed the extreme hands and the capability to be a number one receiver right away, even in his rookie season. I'm just really high on him moving forward, and I'm wondering kind of where ODB is going to be next year in the wide receiver rankings, and I don't think top 15 is too drastic of an estimate at all. Pretty big production there, but overall, my biggest question of this game, just like I wrote in our little prep outline here, is how did this game not get replaced with flex scheduling? We've seen the Giants on national TV over and over again just get destroyed and embarrassed. And it's just, you'd think some of these earlier games, the Cardinals Seahawks, for example, would have been a great candidate for Sunday night. Not necessarily the Packers playing the Vikings, but there was at least one more in there that I thought Lions Patriots would have also been an awesome candidate for Sunday night. Both of those would have been great primetime games to see. But instead, we're watching another NFC East episode, and not too excited about it. Sunday night, The Walking Dead's going to be on. So that's been my dilemma week to week. If the game's any good, or am I going to watch some zombies tear some people up? So we'll see. That show's getting a little bit better for me lately, and that's going to be my big decision when it comes to Sunday night.
You know, I think it's just because of the Cowboys. I mean, this game is not... I don't think it's going to be very good, but I think anytime the Cowboys are in primetime, the NFL and probably the network wants to keep them there just because of the ratings.
I'm sure Jones has something to say about that too.
Yeah, definitely. But not a whole lot to like there. I mean, obviously you're starting your Cowboys, but the Giants, aside from ODB, you know, I'd be hesitant about Rashad Jennings even. But ODB, I'm with you. Heading into next year, definitely a wide receiver too, possibly top 15. He's really, you know, the talent's there, as we've seen, but he's really had a big role, too, from the get-go. So I think, you know, he's kind of like the new Victor Cruz. I mean, I know I don't want to write him off for his career, but I think he's could make a similarly large impact in his first couple seasons. Final game on the slate here, Ravens at Saints. This coming down just a few minutes ago, Pierre Thomas did return to practice Thursday. Seems like he still has a chance maybe... to return. Now, Kyrie Robinson, Travis Cadet did not practice. And of course, he's not going to just take over that starting role. But do you see Pierre Thomas, if he does return, you know, eating into the workload, into the backfield and having some carries there, and stealing some of that workload out of the backfield?
I don't really see a ton of carries heading his way. I think of Pierre Thomas as more of a third down back for the Saints. I think Mark Ingram has more than proven that he should be getting at the very least 20 carries to Pierre Thomas's 8 to 10 tops. I like Pierre Thomas in passing situations. I think he's the better pass, or I know he's the better pass catcher out of the backfield. So it'll be nice for Pierre Thomas to be back. That's another option for fantasy owners, but I'm not really considering starting him this week, even though the Saints have a nice matchup, but they have a home game on national TV. Sean Payton tends to get the boys dialed up for that. So, I mean, he should be owned probably in 12 or greater leagues, But it's a wait-and-see approach just a little bit because I think he does take a backseat to Mark Ingram the rest of the year, along with Kyrie Robinson. Even when Robinson does come back and they have them all at full strength, I think Mark Ingram has earned the title of workhorse. He's deserving of every carry he's going to get, and they're going to ride him hopefully to the playoffs. Despite a pretty poor record, they play in a pretty poor division, so there's still playoff hopes there. So something to think about there for sure.
Yeah, not a good game for Ingram last week. Just 2.9 yards per carry on 23 totes. But he's shown enough in the 3 weeks prior, over 100 yards in all three of those games, three touchdowns, that he deserves to have that feature role. And, you know, I think his struggles last week really a product of the entire New Orleans Saints offense really struggling. Drew Brees in the bunch just not able to sustain drives. And while they're at home this week, you should expect them to be able to, you know, put up some points, at least if you're, you know, if you're still holding on to those expectations of previous years for the Saints. But this matchup isn't that great. The Ravens, decent on defense. I'd still start Ingram and, of course, Jimmy Graham. But if you're talking about a Marcus Colston or Kenny Stills, as you alluded to earlier, I'd be hesitant to deploy any of those fringe Saints guys.
Here's a shot in the cannon for you, Clay. How about Kenny Stills or Steve Smith? Who you think has a better game this week?
I'm going to go...
For those 14 teamers out there, I actually have that decision to make in the league, too.
You know...
Monday night-wise? I mean, that's really tough. I think I'm leaning towards Kenny Stills. That's my preference. I don't want to influence you at all there, but that's what I'm going with. I think that I'm pretty sure that's where our value meter stands as well. Just confirming that right now. Actually, they're right next to each other on the value meter. Wow, that was a better question than I thought. Vlad Sedler checks in. Steve Smith at 36. Kenny Stills at 37.
Wow.
I flip-flopped those just once, but you're getting really picky when you're picking between the 36th and 37th overall receiver. Yeah. You're talking wide receiver three and a 14-teamer.
Yeah, you know, I did just kind of dog Stills and just say, you know, I'd be hesitant to use those fringe guys, but I'd probably give him the nod. I mean, Steve Smith hasn't exceeded 36 yards in his last three games, just one touchdown in his last six games. So, you know, while he had a couple big explosions early in the year, the age is maybe catching up to him a bit this late in the season, and I just hard to trust. I'd rather take the upside of a guy like Stills who, you know, even if he has four targets, one of those could go for 60 yards and a score. So I'll take my chances. With
one last note on Stills, 4,200 on DraftKings. So not great, but pretty decent. There's some profit there with Brandon Cooks out for the season.
Yeah, definitely. Jake, good stuff. Thanks for coming on. Before I let you go here, though, just want to ask you a get-to-know-your-host question here. I want to know, what was your favorite gym class game?
Yeah, now, everyone has their favorite game. All middle schools, high schools, all did it differently. And I know most of us are fans of dodgeball. A lot of us have played dodgeball back in high school. But we did a variation called scatter dodgeball in gym class, and that was my favorite dodgeball to play because it wasn't one side of the gym versus the other side of the gym. It was gym teacher, I don't know, getting lazy if you want to call it that, but taking a gigantic bag of dodgeballs, chucking them out on the gym floor, and it was everybody against everybody. So you could peg anybody that you wanted to as long as there weren't no headshots, air quotes right there. But it was everyone against everyone. If you got hit, you had to sit down until, I can't remember the rule was, but you had to sit down until the person that got you out was out. Then you could get back up. Or if you caught a ball or one rolled you on the ground and you pegged someone else while you were on the ground, you could get back in that way as well. But scatter dodgeball, man, just getting to tee off on anybody you want, not that I was ever bullied or was the role reversal there, but if you're ever a little agitated with somebody, it doesn't hurt to maybe tee off a little bit on gym class and do it that way. But no, I like the independence of that game as opposed to all the rules and limitations of having a line in the middle of the gym that you cannot cross. But very fun topic of gym recess games. Clay, I don't know if you were familiar with that game, and if not, if you had a favorite.
You know, I think we played that once, but not my favorite. My favorite was Lightning. The basketball game, also known as Knockout or Gotcha by some people. Those people are just not my people, I guess you'd say. I just called it Lightning.
It was Lightning for me. That's what I remember.
Okay, cool. Yeah. I don't know if it was a regional thing, but I mean,
how'd that game go again? Let the listeners know.
Yeah, you stand in a line pretty much at the three-point line. the first person in line shoots, and once they shoot, the guy person behind them can shoot. But then you have to try to, if you don't actually make it, you have to make it. And if the person behind you makes it before you do, the person in front of the line, then you're out. You have to exit the game, and it just keeps going until there's only one person standing. And at the end, when it's just two people and you're just chucking up shots, it can get really hectic and really exciting and fun. So
yeah, you can swat a rebound away. Yeah, the other person has to go chase it and then run and get a half-court shot. So it gets pretty competitive, a lot of cardio in there. I enjoyed that game quite a bit as well. I'm glad you brought that up.
I need to play that more, get some cardio.
Yeah, we got to hit the gym because there is snow on the ground in Wisconsin. Not like Buffalo, but about a half an inch, and it's not great. But I know after seeing what's going on out east there, I can't complain too much about snow on the ground. But gym basketball, no blacktop basketball.
Yeah, it's going to be a long winter, that's for sure. But you got to kind of count your blessings when you see that the video on TV of just what's going on there in Buffalo and in the Northeast region. But on that note, I want to thank you for listening to the RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast brought to you by DraftKings.com, the leader in daily fantasy sports. Use the promo code RotoWire when you make your deposit for a free contest entry today. Also, check out RotoWire free for 10 days by going to rotowire.com/pod. That's rotowire.com/pod. For Jake Letarski, I'm Clay Link. The RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast will be back with you tomorrow.